Welcome into a fresh episode of Fireside Sports presented by Oregon Sports News. I'm your host, Casey Babbitt. Well, it is NFL week 3, college football week 4. Summer is officially over, I think. I mean, the equinox is the 22nd, but we always were taught as kids that it ends on the 21st, so however you want to look at it, I'll just tell you, it's over. So if you didn't already know that, you know that today. I want to bring in my co-host. He's from Oregon Sports News. He's from Bleacher Report. He's from everywhere on the interwebs. If you haven't seen him, at Bryant Knox. Follow him on Twitter, at Bryant Knox. Follow him on Facebook. Follow him everywhere. Stalk him if you can. He's not hard to find, but he's really good to listen and watch and read. So if you haven't already, please divulge in all of his sayings and teachings, because he is just he's a step ahead of us in the sports world. But Bryant, how are you doing? Are you enjoying Thursday night football? That's the big question.
Thank you for the introduction, Casey. You know, Thursday night football is what it is at this point. It's one of those things where I don't have my expectations too high, regardless of who's playing. But I'm not going to lie, I was kind of excited for this matchup in particular because the Browns were finally favored in a home game for the first time since 2015. But as we sit here, they're currently trailing by more than a touchdown with 3 minutes to go in the third quarter. So right. I'm not holding my breath on them. You know, if I were a betting man, and who knows, maybe when Oregon finally passes some laws to, line up with the national federal legalization of sports betting, maybe I'll become a betting man. But in the meantime, hypothetically, if I were a betting man, I still actually would have put my money on any team other than the Browns, even though they were favored to win. So my gut is kind of in line with what's happening out here right now. And, I've got it on in the background. If anything crazy happens, I'll probably yell and scream during this podcast. But for the time being, yeah, it is what it is. It's Thursday football, and it kind of is just background white noise at this point.
So let's back up the Brinks truck. So when you say you'd take any team but the Browns, like, you'd bet on, like, the Rams to win tonight? Or what kind of crazy prop bet are you after there?
I'm not going to lie. If the Oregon State Beavers played the Browns tonight, I'd probably pick them.
But do you feel like a team that's not even playing has a better chance of winning than a team that is playing?
I feel like they have a better chance of not losing.
Fair enough.
And you know what?
So they might cover the spread. That's good.
The Browns just proved they can play a game without losing, but also without winning. So I got to give them credit there. But at this point, I'm just not picking the Browns win, even when they're 3-point favorites. I need to see them get a legitimate W before I even think about it.
Well, and you know, the way Vegas rolls out their odds, a 3-point favorite in the NFL is really a wash, because they typically give 3 to 6 points to the home team regardless. So if they're saying it's a 3 points, it really means it's an even up matchup and they don't know who the favorite is.
Yeah, that's 100% correct, and just more evidence that I would have chosen the Jets tonight if I were any sort of betting man.
Well, kudos to you for not betting then, because I don't know that there was a winner to be had in this matchup. Regardless of who wins, anyone watching, you're losing, just because this is not good entertainment. But moving on, we'll get back to the NFL in a few minutes. We've got some NFC West matchups to discuss and debate over. But before we get to that, we're going to dive into Oregon and Oregon State and their matchups coming in up this weekend. Bryant, as a U of O alum, I'll let you take the lead paddle on this one and take us down the river. We've got number 7 Stanford coming to Autzen this Saturday. College Game Day is coming. Oregon is 2-1 in those matchups against Stanford when College Game Day has come to the matchup. What do you have for us on this matchup? Who do you like? What are you afraid of? It could include bats and spiders. I don't know. What do you have to say on this matchup first and foremost?
Well, I'm just going to say straight up right out of the gate, I'm afraid of love. I'm afraid of love. And by that, I mean Bryce Love.
I was going to say, that's Bryce Love? Because love's a great thing. But not necessarily a Bryce Love. That's not a very good thing.
Love is a great thing, but I am definitely afraid of Bryce Love. I think this is the first sort of grit and grind type of hard knocks football team that Oregon's going to face. I do think it's going to be one of the better college football matchups of the weekend. I don't think it's a coincidence or a mistake that ESPN's College Game Day has decided to come to Eugene for this game. I think that the Oregon-Stanford, you know, air quote, rivalry isn't quite what it used to be. But I do think that this particular matchup has a lot of potential to be one of the top 3 to 5 games of the college football weekend, because quite frankly, I think that Oregon has not been pushed up to this point. I think that last week against San Jose State, they finally got a little bit of a challenge, and that was a little disappointing because they weren't supposed to be challenged. But I actually think it's a good thing that they were challenged, because they played meaningful minutes in the second half, and that's going to be huge going into a game against Stanford. I just think that Justin Herbert had phenomenal up to this point, and it's his receivers who are apparently, you know, forgetting to add the stickum to their gloves. Of course, I don't endorse that, but they're clearly forgetting to do that in the first half of games, and they're going to really, really need to be not only crisp on their routes, but also bringing balls close to their chest every time they try to bring it in, because they just haven't been clean in first halves of games thus far, and they're going to need that against Stanford.
So a bigger question is, Stanford has some battle testing already done this season. You know, you could question how big those games really were now that we've seen how the teams they have faced have fared in the weeks that followed. But the truth of the matter is that they have played some good, decent opponents, and Oregon has not. I know when you and I talked a couple weeks ago, we were both a little worried that Oregon would come in a little rusty and not necessarily battle tested. Does the game against San Jose State, does that worry you more now that you've seen that Oregon maybe was a little rusty and they weren't ready to be punched in the mouth? Or do you think that was the wake-up call they needed and they'll be ready for Saturday?
No, I do think that was a wake-up call. I think that they were not prepared for it, and I think they were not prepared at the perfect time, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think that game should have been as close as it was. I think they should have probably beaten the spread, which was something like 41.5 points, which they did not come even close to. But I think that that's exactly what they needed going into a game against Stanford.
So, regards to Bryce Love, I know there was some hemming and hawing over whether or not he would get out of concussion protocol and play this weekend. He is playing. Is this a guy that you think that would have turned Stanford's fates around, or do you think this is someone that it adds to another level to the game, but that Stanford would have been a tough opponent with or without him?
I personally don't think you can discredit anything about Bryce Love, and I don't think that's what you were trying to do.
No.
I think that without him, it would have been a completely different game. Stanford would have been very tough up front on both ends of the football, no doubt about that. They would have been crisp. They would have been clean. But it would have been a drastically different approach as far as Oregon is concerned. And now they're going to have to deal with a Heisman candidate running between the tackles and on occasion on the outside, because he can do that as well.
Well, Oregon definitely boasts one of the top offenses in the nation, but where they come up a little short is on defense. Stanford has a very balanced attack on both sides of the ball, as you mentioned. Do you think that Oregon can score on Stanford enough to keep this game out of their reach for 3.5 quarters, or do you think that Stanford's going to keep this close and Herbert's going to have to make some really tight throws in high-stress situations and prove that he's NFL ready?
Here's what I'll say. I think if Stanford can keep this game in the 20s, Stanford probably comes across with the win, because they probably get something like 27 points to Oregon's 21 or 20. But if Justin Herbert can come out, play a clean game, get his receivers going early, I think you probably end up with a game in the mid-30s both ways, and that benefits Oregon tremendously.
Yeah, and the reason I mentioned the 3.5 quarters, it seems like it's a U of O tradition to not score in the second half of the second quarter and go into halftime maybe a little tighter than you would want. And sometimes that happens in the opening portion of the first quarter. You just never know when it's going to happen. But there seems to be about a 6 or 7 minute span in a lot of high-profile Oregon games where they just don't score when they ought to, and they seem to take their foot off the gas. Are you fearful that's going to happen this weekend, or do you think that they'll be ready for a big-time matchup?
Yes and no, but I think I'm more fearful that they get off to a slow start. I think right. I think you could legitimately see Oregon score 35-ish points in this game while only scoring 7 points in the first half. And I think that that's kind of a wild concept, but I really think that the Ducks could come out stagnant, maybe score 7 to 10 points in the first quarter, even first half, really, because of Stanford's defense. But then if they can come out and get things rolling and score 20 points in the second half, I think that's when it becomes a football game.
So if they go into the fourth quarter and it's a one-score game either direction, how stressed are you?
I am extremely stressed if they have 17 points at that point. I'm less stressed if they have 33. And I know I'm just kind of wash, rinsing, repeat my own analysis here, but I really think it comes down to how much momentum do they have going into the quarter, not necessarily what is the point, you know, discrepancy going into the quarter.
I think regardless of which point total they have, if there's a very tight contest, it's good for Oregon because it'll prove that they can beat a quality opponent. But if it's that tight going into quarter number four, I have to admit I'm nervous. That I'm hoping that when they get to the fourth quarter, they've already got a multiple score lead. I don't expect that to happen, but that's the only way I'm going to be comfortable. If Stanford's got a little ground to get, I'm worried.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I really am.
So we'll move on right after this. So official prediction from you, Oregon wins or Stanford wins? I won't make you name a score, but who do you think wins this ball game?
No, I've got Stanford winning, and I know you didn't ask for a score, but the reason I've got Stanford winning is because I think they hold Oregon into the low 20s. So I think it's something probably along the lines of 30 to 23 Stanford.
I think these teams are very different images, and I think Oregon's going to score on Stanford more than maybe the rest of the nation expects. I really do like Oregon in this one. I think they're going to win. I think if it were in Palo Alto that Stanford would have a better chance, it would probably win, but I really like the Ducks at home. I'm going to take Oregon.
Yeah, no arguments here. I could definitely see it going that way. I think I'm just a little more worried about the first half in right. general, and I think if they get off to the slow start, I suspect they will. They just don't have the firepower on the outside or the ability to stop Bryce Love on the inside to come up in the second half. But like I said, I'm going to be watching this game with a close eye for sure, and I'm going to remember your analysis because I hope you're right.
Well, and if they get that stick-em, I think it could turn around for them even sooner. But if they get off to the slow start and they see some drops after that, that could be really disappointing, but we'll hope for the best. So moving on to Oregon State, they host the Arizona Wildcats this weekend. What are your thoughts there? I mean, the Beavers have definitely looked better than last year, but they've still got a lot of question marks. We know that this is now an official rebuild, so we know they're not going to necessarily be a championship-eligible team this year, but they could still be bowl-eligible. They're only a few wins away from being bowl-eligible, so who do you like this weekend? Do you like the Wildcats on the road? Do you like the Beavers at home? Is that more of a watch for you? Which teams looked most impressive to you this season so far?
Man, I know a couple weeks ago we got cut short before we could actually make official Oregon State and Oregon predictions, but we kind of teased it, and I threw out there that I thought Oregon State was a two-win football team. They've convinced me mostly wrong up to this point, and I still think that they're not going to be bowl eligible, but what I will say is that they have proven they have an offense that can put points on the scoreboard, and they've done it at a more sustainable level than I expected. We saw them put up 31 points against OSU, and I thought they did it in meaningless moments. They put up 48 points against Southern Utah, and I thought, well, it's Southern Utah. So then I thought, okay, they're playing at Nevada, and they're averaging something like the 46th most points in the country, which, of course, is not upper echelon, but it was far better than, what, the 126th or whatever it was a year ago.
Right.
So I thought, okay, they're going to regress to the, you know, the mean. But they put up 35 points last week, even in a two-point loss. And so, yes, they're 1-2. No, I don't think they're going to be bowl eligible. But I do think they're going to really challenge Arizona, who has themselves failed to regularly put up points on the board. I think Oregon State's offense is going to come out and give Arizona a challenge.
Is there a quarterback controversy? They haven't really had a chance to start the same quarterback in consecutive games yet, if my math is right. But, you know, Jake Luton's looked good when he's had time. I don't know if he's a Herbert like they all thought he was last year before the freak injury, but he's looked solid. Is there a quarterback controversy there, or do you think he has the job and he just needs to stay healthy?
No, I think he has the job. I got to admit, I don't follow Oregon State football as closely as I follow Oregon football, so I don't know exactly what's going on behind the scenes the way I do with the Ducks. But what I'll say is, that team has put up enough points, even in two out of three games where they lost, that I feel like they have a I'll say they have a comfortability. And when you are not exactly projected to be a bowl team, comfortable is good. You don't want to be comfortable if you're trying to be elite, and you don't want to be comfortable if you're downright bad. But if you're trying to figure out your identity, comfortability is a good thing. And so at least if it were up to me, you'd stick with what you've got going.
Well, and I'm pulling up a preview of the game, and unfortunately he's actually doubtful to play this weekend due to an ankle injury. So Connor Blount, who has actually played pretty well against Ohio State and actually played part of the Southern Utah game, he could be the starter. He actually played a pretty good portion of the Nevada game, so they really do have two very capable quarterbacks. It's just anyone's guess as to when they're going to pick one as the go-forward starter. It sure seems like Jonathan Smith is leaning towards Luton as the guy because he's the senior. He's got the capabilities. You know, he's running out of eligibility, but he's there right now. He missed a lot of games last year, I believe 7 games last year with an injury. But he's very talented, and he's a big guy, and he's got a big arm, and he's a good quarterback. I just don't know if he's going to play this weekend, because it seems like every time he gets going, he gets hurt again, which obviously as Oregon people, we know that. Looking at the past products that Oregon's put on the field, it seems like a good quarterback's always hurt for the Ducks. So wouldn't surprise me either way, regardless of who's playing, whether it's Blount or Luton. One of them should be able to get the job done against Arizona.
Yeah, and, you know, to your original point, he did play well against Ohio State. And I'm hesitant to give him too much credit for that because it was in relatively meaningless minutes.
Right.
And I'm not taking away from the reps that he got because I think those are very, very important. I am just hesitant to think, what is he going to do against a true starting unit, even if it's not a team the caliber of Ohio State. But that said, you know, I don't know. Like I said, I don't follow this team as closely as Oregon, but I do know that his ball control has been decent so far. He's thrown a solid completion percentage. I think he has a couple interceptions, but I also think he has like twice as many touchdowns early in the season. So I think that he's going to be a viable option if he does start.
Yeah, I think either one, whether it's Blount or Luton, they'll be okay. I mean, it's Arizona. They're not as good as they have been in years past. I think the Beavers will get an easy win this Saturday at home, which, you know, will potentially put them back at 500 on the season and only 4 games to go to be a bowl eligible, which is a pretty good turnaround from last year when they were struggling to just win one game. Who do you have in this game, Bryant?
You know, I've got the Beavers winning it, and I disagree that it's going to be an easy win because you know, Oregon is going to come in, or Oregon State, excuse me, is going to come into this game, despite being at home, by a touchdown, if not more, underdog against Arizona. But I am not looking too closely at that line and taking it seriously, because I don't think Arizona can put up the points that Oregon State can. I think you probably end up with something along the lines of a 35-27 win, Oregon State, and maybe closer, maybe within a touchdown. But I just think that the Beavers are just going to keep on scoring. Right. And as long as they come up against teams that can't score at the same rate, they're going to be fine.
Yeah, and you have really the common link here is you have Oregon State beat Southern Utah 45-28, and you have Arizona beat Southern Utah 62-31 the following week. So it's anyone's guess how this one's going to go. I just like what I've seen from Oregon State so far, and I'm not really thrilled with what I've seen from Arizona. I mean, they had a really nice opening week against BYU, still lost, though. Then they got their butts handed to them by Houston. Houston's a quality team, but not high, high quality. So you could look at that and kind of take whatever you want from it. I just look at it and go, I think Oregon State's going to have, maybe easy's overstating it, but I think that they'll win this game without having too much of an uphill climb.
Yeah, I'm pretty much with you.
So moving on to the NFL, we have some NFC West matchups to get to. So we'll start with the 49ers at the Chiefs. You have the Chiefs, who are just slicing and dicing through opposing defenses. Patrick Mahomes looks ridiculously good. 10 touchdowns in 2 weeks. No one's ever done that before. Not a rookie, not a veteran. Peyton Manning hasn't done it. Tom Brady hasn't. Aaron Rodgers hasn't. Name a passer throughout the course of the NFL. No one's ever had 2 weeks in a row with that many touchdowns. It's never happened. So, what do the 49ers do against this offense, Bryant? You've got Patrick Mahomes throwing for a bunch of touchdowns. Not necessarily a ton of yards yet, but they're looking like the 99 Rams. You have Kareem Hunt, who hasn't even hit his ceiling yet, which is crazy for how good the team is. You have Tyreek Hill, who's just, I guess, faster than anybody on the planet right now, running circles around defenses. And then the 49ers, I mean, they've got some pretty decent defensive players. They've got Richard Sherman. They have some guys in their defensive line and in their secondary, some former Ducks even. But I'm just not sure they're up for this. I mean, they barely held off Detroit last week, and they couldn't hold off the Vikings in week one. Is this a game you think the 49ers can win, or are they getting set up for a blowout? The game is at Arrowhead, by the way, in Kansas City, if that matters.
Yeah, I have two actually competing thoughts on this.
Okay.
I think Patrick Mahomes absolutely comes back down to earth, right? There's no way he's going to throw for his average of 5 touchdowns. There's no way he's going to have another 582-yard game. It's just not going to happen. But I think that this KC team is actually more complete than people are giving it credit. I think that everybody's looking at Mahomes and saying, wow, he is leading the charge, which he is.
Right.
Can't take away from that. But I think people are looking at him so closely and putting him under a microscope to the point that it's actually taking away from the other playmakers on the field. So no, I don't think Mahomes scores 5 touchdowns by himself. But I do think that Kansas City actually comes out with a pretty decently convincing win. I'm not sure it's double digits necessarily, but I think 7-10 points is pretty reasonable for them to come away with a win.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I think the law of averages will out eventually, and Mahomes will come back down to earth, and it's probably this week. But I still think Kansas City will win handily, and probably by 17-20 points. I think it'll be a fun first half shootout with Kansas City pulling away in the third and fourth quarter. So then the next game is you have the Cardinals hosting the Bears. There's not much to say about the Cardinals because they've barely done anything in 2 weeks. They have like a combined 300 or 400 yards through two games. So there's not much to say about their offense. They're dreadful right now. The Bears, on the other hand, their defense has the most sacks in the NFL. The Khalil Mack trade looks better every day. But their offense is still in the works with Mitch Trubisky and a whole host of guys that he's never played with before, and a new offensive scheme under Matt Nagy. Who do you like in this one? I mean, it's in a dome, so you don't have to worry about weather, but neither offense is really impressed yet, but the Bears' defense has looked so good. I'm leaning towards taking the Bears. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I definitely lean toward the Bears as well. I admit that I don't know as much about the Cardinals as I should, considering their division. But I do know that the Bears and...
Let me give you a quick recap. So Sam sure. Bradford is the Cardinals quarterback and has thrown for 250 yards total in two games, okay?
Yep.
And then you have David Johnson, who signed the mega deal in the offseason right before the preseason, I believe. He's rushed for less than 100 yards in two games total.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
And they're getting outscored 58-6. That's the Cardinals' two-week schedule in a nutshell.
The Cardinals have 6 points total. Did you just say that?
Six points total in 1 week. They were shut out 34-0 last week to L.A., the L.A. Rams. Yeah.
Well, I knew they were shut out last week. I didn't know their week one score. But obviously none of this changes my mind that right. the Bears are probably going to be victorious in this one. I will say Trubisky's been a little more impressive than I expected. I thought the Seahawks, you know, in their post, you know, truly strong defensive era post that, I thought they were still going to give him some trouble. And admittedly, they did at times, but clearly not enough because right. they dropped that game by a solid touchdown, if I remember correctly. And so I think that the Bears, they've been a much cleaner team than I expected. And so I got to give them this one for sure.
Yeah, I'm taking them. I think they'll have an easy win. I mean, it's Arizona at home, but they had the home game against the Redskins in week one and blew it. So I don't know that the home court really matters for them. Moving on to the Rams hosting the Chargers, the battle for Los Angeles. I have the Rams winning this one pretty easily. The Chargers have looked good on offense. Their defense isn't inspiring much hope. I mean, it's very injured. Joey Bosa's sidelined. They don't have Jason Verrett, who's out with an injury for the whole year. Casey Hayward can only do so much. You've got Derwin James, who's a rookie. And Melvin Ingram's a great pass rusher. I just don't know what this defense can do when they're having to shoulder so much of a load. On the other side, you've got Phillip Rivers and Melvin Gordon and Austin Ekbar or Ekelar or Akbar, however you say his last name. It's a trap. And you've got Mike Williams, you've got Keenan Allen, you've got a lot of talent. I just wonder how this team's going to line up against the Rams. I think it'll be a good game early on. I just feel like the Rams' defense is going to put the latches down and put a vice grip on them late, and Phillip Rivers might get stuck throwing interceptions to Marcus Peters just like he did when he was with the Chiefs.
Yeah, for me, you know, the Chargers have had a very interesting schedule through 2 weeks, and I don't think a lot of teams can say they've had very interesting schedules, but they've had the probably surprisingly good Chiefs in week one.
Right.
They had the atrociously bad Buffalo Bills in week two, and that doesn't give you a lot to work with as far as right. comparisons, right? So going into this game, I think it's going to be pretty similar to their week one game against the Chiefs. I think they probably drop it by, you know, maybe 10 to 14 points. But I definitely have the Rams taking this one in somewhat convincing fashion.
Yeah, I think it'll be a fun game in the first half. But I think after that, you might want to tune into something else. It's going to get ugly. So on to the main event, Seattle home opener versus the Cowboys. Seattle's 0-2, Dallas is 1-1. I don't need to tell you, but I will, that the percentages for teams that start 0-2 and make the playoffs, it's drastically bad. It only gets worse if they fall to 0-3. Before we get into the how and the why, is this a game that you think Seattle can win?
Yes, I think there is no possible way they fall to 0-3.
Okay, so let's list off some of the tangibles then. So we have an offensive line that's allowed 12 sacks, the most throughout the first 2 weeks. You have Russell Wilson, who's thrown 5 touchdowns to 3 interceptions, and he has a lost fumble. He's thrown 69 passes, only completed 45 of them, and he's only thrown for about 545 yards, which is still a good amount. It's just the amount of times he's having to throw. He's not able to complete a lot of passes. He doesn't have Doug Baldwin. Jimmy Graham's gone. Luke Wilson's gone. Chris Carlson's not the player that we really thought he was going to be out of the gate. You can blame that on the offensive line. You can blame it on game flow, whatever you want. You've got Rashard Penny, who's not quite there yet. He was the victim of a gruesome pick six last week that really put the game on ice. The Seahawks were driving, and then Fuller or somebody on the Bears stepped in front of the pass and returned it for six. It was intended for Penny. He just really stayed behind the defender. It was a rookie mistake. He'll make up for it in the future, but there's just so many problems on offense right now. Russell Wilson looks like Atlas to me. He's just got the weight of the world on his shoulders, and I don't know that there's much he can do with the talent around him. And we haven't even gotten to defense yet, but on the flip side, you got the Cowboys who have Dak Prescott. They have Ezekiel Elliott. Just those two players alone scare me. The receiving corps, not scary at all. They've got Miles Gallup, who's a good player, but he's a rookie. You've got a bunch of riffraff around them. They don't have Jason Witten. They don't have Dez Bryant. They do have Cole Beasley, but he's a very poor man's Julian Edelman. But I feel like that team has more strengths than this team does at this present time. Maybe not for the whole season, but right now, offense to offense, I feel like Dallas has a bit more firepower. What do you think?
Dallas definitely has more firepower. But I think that, and I hope this doesn't come across as biased, because I will throw it out there. I'm not a Seattle Seahawks fan, right? I follow the team. I'm not someone who considers myself a fan. But I think that this team has enough character to not go down 0-3, especially against a flawed team like the Cowboys. I agree with you 100%. They have more firepower, and I think they have bigger bodies, and I think that on paper, they probably win this game in a neutral location. But at home, down on their luck with two losses and no wins on the season, I think the Seahawks, offensive line be damned. I think they have the character and the grit to come across or to come out with a very close win in week three against Dallas.
So then on defense, you're getting Bobby Wagner back. I haven't heard officially if KJ Wright's coming back, but hopefully he will. You've got Shaq Griffin, you've got Shaquem Griffin, you've got Earl Thomas. You're not going to have Cam Chancellor. You're not going to have Richard Sherman. They're not here this year. Chancellor might come back next year, but Sherman's gone for good. You've got a very little pass rush with who you've got on the field right now. Frank Clark is good, and I think he'll turn that around sooner or later. But right now, the defensive line just isn't what it used to be. Getting rid of Michael Bennett was the right move because he was clearly past his prime and didn't want to be here anyway. Cliff Avril couldn't pass a physical, so totally understand that. But you've limited what your pass rush is. And we talked about this a few weeks ago, that Pete Carroll's trying to rebuild through the draft and free agency, turn guys you never heard of into household names. TJ McDougald has turned into a interception machine at safety. And you've got some guys that are playing really well. The problem is they're being asked to do so much, and they're on the field so much of the time. Do you think this is a defense that can slow down Ezekiel Elliott and Dak Prescott enough, or do you think they're in for some trouble?
The word enough is a very crucial word there, right? Because I actually do think they can slow them down enough. Do I think they can slow them down completely, or do I think they can slow them down to get a convincing win? No, at this point, I have no reason to think that. But if we're asking, can they slow them down enough, keep them in a reasonable range, then yeah, I think they actually do have the talent and the grit and the system to pull that off.
So you've got Dallas coming to town. They went to Carolina in week one, lost by a touchdown in a game that really came down to just some bad play calling. They didn't give Elliott the ball enough, and that's on them. They lost fair and square to the Panthers. Week two, they go and beat New York pretty handily. I think it was only a one-score game on the scoreboard, but New York had a lot of trouble in that game. They couldn't get the ball to Odell Beckham Jr., couldn't get it to Saquon Barkley. Eli Manning just looked like he didn't look good, I'll say that much. So Dallas has got some pieces on the defensive side that they're using their advantage right now. They're wreaking havoc on the opposing team. They're only allowing, I believe, 15 or 16 points per game through the first couple weeks, which that number is going to blow up sooner or later because they're not playing the best offenses right now. But even against Seattle, they're going to be without Baldwin again. They're going to have, you know, some glaring missing players here. How many points do you think Seattle has to score to win this one?
I think they have to score 27-30. And I don't think they need a blowout beyond that. But I also think they're going to give up enough points into the early 20s that they need something more convincing than a 23-point final to get this win. Right. So that's what I'm going with.
So I'm going to hope that Seattle does not drop to 0-3 on the season, because I'll tell you that the statistics I have in front of me tell me that there's a 2.9 chance they make the playoffs if they go to 0-3, and that's going back to 1980. Whereas if they are at 1-2, those chances not necessarily skyrocket, but they go into the 20s, which is even better. So I hope that they don't lose this one, but after watching them against Denver and against Chicago, even though those two games were on the road, I just didn't see enough to make me have any confidence that they'll win this week. I'm going to have to pick the Cowboys.
Which I think is completely fair. I, this is coming from someone who didn't get to watch the entire game last week against the Bears, so I don't have all of the scouting perspective that maybe you do or someone else does. But me personally, I just think there's no possible way this team with these personalities and this system drops to 0-3. Maybe I'm completely off here, but I've got them winning something like 27-23.
And I hope you're right. I've watched both games in their entirety. And Seattle looked pretty good in the first half against Chicago. They didn't score enough. Second half, the wheels just came off and they went into desperation mode and it looked bad. Similar to how the Denver game ended. They shot themselves in the foot more than the opposing team beat them. I'll say that for them. But I'm just nervous that they can pull this game out when they've got pressure to turn the season around so early. So with that, we'll have to sign off because we missed our mark of 30 minutes. We're actually at the 38-minute mark, so we got to get going, get you guys to your weekend. We appreciate you checking us out and listening. Very much appreciate your support. Make sure you follow him on Twitter, at Bryant Knox. I'm at Oregon Sports Guy. Make sure you follow Oregon Sports News, great feature website for all of your favorite Northwest articles on sports, health, a little commentary thrown in, everything you need, nothing you don't. Thanks for listening to us. Stay classy, Portland. Hope you have a good week 3 in the NFL and a good week 4 in college football. Enjoy your games and enjoy your lives. Stay classy. We'll see you next time.